Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians and social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoy today's podcast.
So now, without any further ado, I'm delighted to present our speaker, Kenneth Smith. It's all yours, Ken.
Thank you so much, Rick. I'm honored to be with you all this afternoon and hope and pray this will be a fruitful time for all of us. I'd like to give you some brief background about my interest in motivational interviewing, which I'm going to refer to as MI for the rest of our time together. I was exposed to MI a few years ago by some colleagues of mine during my training to be credentialed as an addiction specialist in the state of North Carolina. During the spring of 2008, I happened to be reading a colleague's copy of the NASW News and saw an ad from a group that was recruiting 200 clinicians from across the country from nonprofit agencies to be trained in MI. 100 would be trained in 2008 and 100 would be trained in 2009. The training was sponsored by and was being held in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by a group led by the co-founder of MI, William Miller. Since I was working as a clinician in a nonprofit hospital, I applied for one of the 200 spots and by God's grace was accepted. So in the fall of 2008, I flew to New Mexico and participated in 3 days of intensive training in MI with 99 other clinicians from all across the country. At the end of the training, we did a role play in which we did an MI session with a person role playing a client. That session was recorded, and I was given specific feedback on how I did. After the training, we agreed to record 3 other MI sessions with actual clients of ours, of course, with their written permission, over a year's time, and those recordings were sent to the training group, and I received written feedback about how I did. We also received 3 months of additional phone training with a certified MI trainer. It turns out that the 200 clinicians were part of a research project to test whether 2 ways of training clinicians in MI would lead to different abilities to evoke and respond to client change talk, and we're going to be talking about the concept of client change talk in a few minutes. Specifically in substance abuse treatment sessions. I was recently told that I was in the group that received the enhanced MI training and thus was supposedly more likely to be effective at using MI skills with clients. The group plans to publish the results soon. I will find out if indeed I was more effective than the other group. Since then, I have found MI to be tremendously useful in my clinical work. I doubt a day goes by that I don't use MI skills. Shortly after the training, I began to ponder about how MI could be integrated with biblical values and particularly how Jesus may have used MI skills. This workshop is a result of what I learned during my MI training, plus my own thinking and research from others' thinking about how Jesus modeled and used MI skills, and even some ways in which Scripture is compatible and is at odds with MI. I'm not a trained theologian, but so some of the biblical ideas are just my own thinking, and I hope that you'll find it helpful. So here we go. Slide number 2, I have the workshop objectives. I examine the core theory and principles of MI, gain an understanding of the strategies and skills of MI, discover how Jesus modeled and used MI skills, and learn strategies for integrating biblical faith with MI. I'd like to start with a pretest, and since we're being muted here, I just want you to answer this question to yourself and see how you do on this pretest. And it's found in slide number 3. I will say a question, and you can think to yourself whether this question is true or false. Number 1, motivational interviewing convinces clients to change even if they don't want to. And that is false because the MI skills will not be effective if the person is not motivated to change. We cannot change anyone, but we can influence them. And the current problem that the client has to be in conflict with a cherished value of theirs, and we'll be talking about that later on. So number 1 is false. We can't change anybody no matter what skills we're using. Number 2, MI is relevant for substance abuse but not other issues. Well, that is false because MI started out in substance abuse, but now it's used for a lot of other problems, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. Number 3, MI is useful for all clients. And actually, that is also false, because if a client is already ready to change and is making a plan toward change, we don't want to talk them back into ambivalence, but we want to focus on the fact that they are already ready to change. And MI often is not useful for clients that are into resistance, and we're going to talk about resistance later on. Number four, MI is something that is used in place of other skills. And that is false, because MI can add to and it blends very well with other approaches. It's certainly not the be-all and end-all. And number five, MI can be combined with a confrontational style. And that is also false, because confrontation is on the opposite end of the continuum of NI. MI believes that direct persuasion is not an effective method for resolving ambivalence, but instead, when we try to use direct persuasion, the client gets more defensive and they argue for it actually not changing. So I hope that you got an A on though on that pretest. All the questions there were false. Let's talk for a few minutes about the roots of MI, and I'm just going to do a brief history. You can certainly read more about this in motivational interviewing textbooks referred to on your last slide with my references. But basically, the concept of MI evolved from experience in treating problem drinkers, where Dr. William Miller and others began to have doubts about coercive confrontation. Those of you that have done substance abuse work for a long time might know that in the 70s and 80s, the big deal was to confront addicts, call them addicts, tell them that they needed to change, tell them that they were bad and they were negatively influencing the people around them. And what we found is that just doesn't work, that when people get confronted and get called names, they often get more defensive. So Miller first published an article in 1983, and by 1991, the fundamental concepts of MI began to take shape, particularly when he combined with Dr. Stephen Rolnick, who developed the concept of ambivalence. Miller was also influenced by Carl Rogers, his client-centered unconditional positive regard, where basically the worker is seen as the caboose and the client is seen as the train, and we are to follow the client's direction. But MI has a twist on that, because there are times that MI is consciously directive and consciously trying to help the client resolve that ambivalence toward change, and we're going to be talking about that later on. Another theory that Miller used that I was not familiar with, but I really find fascinating, is a theory from Daryl Bem. He's a psychologist who came up with what he calls a self-perception theory, and that is that people tend to become more committed to that which they hear themselves defend. So if the client himself or herself is hearing themselves talk about change and hearing the therapist talk about change, they're much more likely to do it. And then the final type of theory that Miller was influenced by was Prochaska and DiClemente, their stages of change, the trans-theoretical model of change, and we're going to talk about that later on. So MI now is certainly an accepted practice, and many people are being trained in it. And moving to the next slide, you can see that MI is not only applicable for substance abuse, but for many other problems. You can see the list of problems there that you can use for MI. It's very good for people that want to stop smoking and or losing weight, and maybe they have ambivalence about it, medication compliance, really any situation in which a client can be ambivalent, where part of them wants to change and part of them doesn't want to change, MI can be useful for. At this point, slide number six, MI is being well researched. There's been over 200 controlled clinical trials that have tested the effectiveness of MI, and Hetman, Steele, and William Miller in 2005, and this is actually on the Motivational Interviewing website, they have a list of all the research projects that have been done on MI. And what has come out of the research is that MI is very good on helping people reduce their substance abuse. It is very good on helping people increase their change talk and decrease resistance. And MI has also been proven very effective for helping people comply with behaviors such as taking medication, sticking to their diet, things like that. So MI is a well-researched methodology at this point. Let's move on to slide number seven to the definition of MI. And from the textbook, the Motivational Interviewing textbook of 2002 by Miller and Rolnick, they define MI as being a client-centered, directive method for enhancing intrinsic motivation to change by exploring and resolving ambivalence. And that will be a question on your test at the end. I'm going to give you hints about the questions that are going to come at the end of the workshop, the CEU questions, and there will be a question about MI exploring and resolving ambivalence. There's a new definition that came out last year, and this is a really long one, but it really is more specific about what MI is trying to do. And this newly evolved definition is on your slide, and it's a collaborative, goal-oriented method of communication with particular attention to the language of change. It's intended to strengthen a person's motivation for and commitment to a target behavior change by listening and exploring the person's own arguments for change. So that's the basic theme and the theory of what MI is trying to accomplish. Let's talk a little bit about ambivalence, because this is the core issue of MI, trying to help clients resolve ambivalence. I'm sure if not a day goes by that in some way, shape, or form, you don't hear your client say, "I want to change, but I really don't want to." And you hear these ambivalent statements all the time with the people you work with. And what we find is ambivalence certainly is normal. We all get into ambivalence about a lot of different things. I have some examples on the slide there. We may have ambivalence about changing jobs. We may have ambivalence about eating junk food. We really, really, really enjoy junk food, but we know it's bad for us. I personally have a lot of ambivalence about security screening in airports. I know it's necessary, but I certainly don't enjoy it. And hopefully by this point, nobody's having ambivalence about being at this workshop, although maybe a few of you already are. So ambivalence, again, is normal. And people will often get stuck between, I want to change, but I don't want to. And they'll lack confidence that they can change. So what MI is trying to do is help the client to resolve that ambivalence toward working toward the change. And the idea would be that ambivalence is not resolved by putting more pressure on the client or trying to persuade the client, but by the client themselves making the argument for change. Let's talk a little bit about the core values of motivational interviewing. This is slide number 9, the spirit of motivational interviewing. And what we're trying to do as an MI practitioner is we're trying to collaborate with the client. That is, we're trying to provide a conducive atmosphere, or kind of a partnership with the client. We find common ground with the client. We're working together as a team, and that's the constant theme that we want to give to the client, that we're working together. I want to work with you is the message I want to give to the client. Evocation. Evocation refers to drawing out the client's concerns, drawing out the client's thoughts. The idea would be that the answer is within the client, and the worker's job is to draw those answers out and help the client to understand their own motivations and understand what's going on inside of themselves because they are themselves are verbalizing it. And then autonomy. Of course, this is a social work value, a self-determination, that the client chooses how and when to change when it makes sense to them, and the client has their own personal responsibility for changing. Of course, these three things are very consistent with social work values. The opposite of motivational interviewing is confrontation, education, and authority. Confrontation would be taking a stance that the person has the problem and they can't see it, but we can see it, and we're going to tell the person how much they have the problem, whether they can see it or not. And that has just not been found to be a helpful approach at all for a lot of people. And then education. We do, as MI practitioners, offer direct advice, but only if the client asks for it. And we always give them the caveat that even though I'm giving you this education, you are still free to use that education in any way you'd like to. So, for example, if I'll typically tell a client that's drinking alcohol that alcohol is a central nervous system depressant that is having an effect on their liver and on their brain, and they have autonomy to decide what they want to do with that information. What I don't want to do is give the sense of the client that I know better than them. I have all this knowledge, and therefore I know better than them. Authority is certainly something I don't want to do as an MI practitioner. I don't want to take a one-up stance that I know what the client needs, and again, I'm the counselor and you're the client, and therefore I'm in a one-up position over you. I do not want to make the client a passive and obedient recipient of my knowledge or my skill. That is not good for building relationship and helping the person resolve ambivalence. And there will be a question on your test about that in terms of am I not being into confrontation as an approach. Next slide talks about the principles of motivational interviewing. And there's four basic principles. Number one is to express empathy. What we want to be doing a lot is communicating, understanding of the client's thoughts and feelings and experiences. We want to demonstrate warmth to them. We want to be non-judgmental to them. Basically, the message I want to give the client is, I get it. I'm joining your world, and I get it. I understand as best as I can what you're going through, what you're thinking, and what you're feeling. Developing discrepancy is also very important for MI. Developing discrepancy, what that really means is you're trying to help the client understand that the way they're behaving right now is not in conflict with their values, that there's a gap between where they are right now and where they want to be. You want to help the client develop awareness of the positive and negative consequences of their current behavior and help them see that they can change that behavior for their good, for something that they're motivated to change. We're going to talk a little bit more about discrepancy later on. Self-sufficiency. We want to bring up the client's belief in their ability to change. We want to help them gain confidence that they can indeed change and make their life better. We want to act in some ways like a cheerleader for that client. And then rolling with resistance. Resistance is something that we want to make use of. We want to understand it. But we want to stay out of the power struggles. We don't want to feed into it. We don't want to challenge it. Instead, we want to reflect it and want to let the client just go with it and try to help them understand where that resistance is coming from. And that will be a question on your test, that the MI practitioner does what we call roll with resistance. And we're going to talk a little bit more about resistance later on. Next slide, what makes for change? MI practitioners believe that there's three basic issues that helps the client be motivated for change. One is that they have to be willing to change, of course, and that starts with recognizing the problem, recognizing that there is something I'm doing right now that's not helping me with what's important to me. A classic example would be at the detox center I work, we have female clients who have opiate addictions or other addictions, and they have children. And sometimes DSS has come in and taken those children away, or those children are living with other people because of their addiction. And they come in, and obviously their children mean a lot to them, and their children, they love their children, they want their children back. So we want to help them develop a discrepancy between their addiction, which is not helping them with their children, not helping them be a good parent, and what they need to do to change in order to be that parent that they want to be. And then we want to do the part in terms of being able, and that is helping the client develop confidence and hope that they indeed can change. And then we want to be able to help the client develop some intentionality. I find that to be a very powerful concept in therapy with my clients, helping the client to develop some intentionality. What I mean by that is some conscious choice and conscious decision that they can make toward change, even whether they feel like it or not. So when you hear the client talking about recognizing their problems, when you hear the client talking about that perhaps they have hope that something can change in their life, and when they start to do some intentional behaviors toward change, then they're really on their way. And then more specifically, the next slide talks about change talk. And these are the kind of statements that the client will make that lets you know that the client is ready, able, and willing to change. And the MI practitioners have a little acrostic that they use to kind of listen for change talk, and it's called DARN, D-A-R-N. And the D stands for desire. So when the client says, you know, I want to stop drinking, for example, or I want to become sober, that's a key word. Whenever they're saying I want to, they're at that point or into what we call change talk. Ability, I can. Go to that AA meeting and go with other people and be with other people that want to be sober. I can begin to change my diet and eat less because I want to lose weight. So anytime the person verbalizes a can statement, that's a change talk. Reasons, that's the R part. I should because. So, for example, the client starts to verbalize why they want to change, what the benefit is of their change. And then need. This is a client that says, I must change because of whatever reason they give. I hear a lot of addicts that I work with talk about, I must change because if I don't, I'm going to potentially die, or if I don't, I'm going to have some serious health problems. So at that point, the client is verbalizing some change talk. And what I would like you to be able to recognize is the difference in change talk versus other types of talk that the client gives. Let me give you some examples. MI has four types of talk they talk about that the client will give you.